Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators, a podcast for translators by translators, bringing you simple strategies to build better habits. In each episode, we will focus on specific habits for translators in various stages of their careers. If you're a translator who enjoys learning about habits to improve your business and lifestyle, then this is the podcast for you. We're your hosts, Madalena Sanchez-Ampalo
and Veronica De Michelis. Like you, we are professional freelance translators trying to balance the challenges that come with building a career and maintaining clarity and boundaries between work and personal life. We hope you'll join us in this conversation about smart habits and discover some simple strategies you can apply today to help you build your career and achieve the lifestyle you desire.
Welcome to Smart Habits for Translators. This is episode 11. Before we start, we'd like to share some kind words from our listener, Gry Bruno, a Norwegian translator based in London. I just wanted to say that I absolutely love your podcast, especially the discussion about imposter syndrome. I almost felt that you had made it just for me. It's so reassuring when you realize you're not the only one out there with these kinds of thoughts. Thanks so much for your feedback, Gry. And to our listeners, if you missed it, Gry was referring to episode 2. You'll find it in your favorite podcast app and on our website. We'll have the link to it in our show notes for this episode.
Tusen takk, Gry. Thank you for listening and sharing how that episode made you feel. This is the best reward for our work on this podcast.
So let's get to the topic of today's episode. In our previous episodes, we talked about organizing your to-do list and finding motivation to do the tasks that you need to get done. But sometimes the reason we feel we're not being productive, not focused, or not motivated is that there's simply too much mental or physical clutter around us. So today we wanted to talk about smart habits for decluttering, cleaning out, organizing, and simplifying what's happening in our office, on our desk, and in our heads. Veronica, what are your thoughts on how physical and mental clutter affect us?
Oh boy, where do I start? I love this topic. I know that everyone is different, and there are a lot of people I know who are not bothered by clutter at all, or at least they say so, or at least to a certain point, it doesn't seem to bother them. But that's definitely not me. I get distracted, I get stressed out and anxious when there's clutter around me. And that hasn't always been the case. I'm someone who accumulates stuff easily, especially now that I have two kids. And there's several additional factors that contribute to that, at least for me personally. You know, when I was growing up, Russia was the Soviet Union, and there was a general lack of things you could buy. And I'm talking food items, clothes, shoes, books, you name it. So, you know, people would like stock up on things just because they weren't sure if they were able to buy them, they would stock up because they weren't sure if they would, you know, not be able to buy them again for a while. Mm-hmm. So right. Even now, many years after the situation in my home country changed and I have lived abroad for many years, I still have that sort of ingrained feeling that I need to stock up. So yeah. I still have to hold myself back when I'm purchasing something, when I really don't need to buy extra.
Yeah, or save things for too long or something,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly, yeah. And on a side note, after having lived in Norway for 7 years, I really started appreciating the minimalist style and approach to life, so that's been really good for me. And I know that it's important to control both the buying sort of urges and just accumulating clutter around you, but both for financial reasons, but also because I think that even if you don't realize it or you feel like you're fine with it, it does affect your ability to focus when there's stuff lying around the house or around the room where you work. I think it's distracting even if we don't necessarily realize it right away. And it's really amazing how much stuff we accumulate over time and how it seems to grow just uncontrollably.
Yeah.
And there's stuff streaming into our lives from all directions. It's so easy to buy things online nowadays. And at certain stages in life, it's especially hard to sort of be a minimalist and declutter, or at least limit the amount of clutter that you have. We all know that it's easy to accumulate extra stuff when you become a parent, at least, right? But do you think that our profession promotes accumulating clutter too? I'm thinking of, you know, books, dictionaries, notes, papers, sort of electronic devices and files that we need in our work.
That's interesting. I think maybe in the past it was maybe a type of profession that you could accumulate more clutter, but the way that we work now, I don't know. I don't think necessarily that our profession lends itself to accumulating too much clutter, at least not for me anyway. I actually downsized my office desk a year or so ago because I felt like I had way too many places to just save papers and hang on to things that I didn't really need. And since so much of what we do as translators is electronic, I didn't really see the point in keeping files that I was never really going to look at again. But that said, I do tend to pick up papers and things when I attend meetings and conferences, and that's the kind of clutter that comes back with me, and it'll stay in a pile until I have time to deal with it. Sometimes I deal with it with whatever it is I need to do after the conference or meeting, but then that pile still remains there because it seems like, oh, I'm going to need this, you know, in 3 months when I'm planning something or writing a report or something like that. Mm-hmm. So those are the types of things that actually really bug me in my office space. I'm also not one of those people who keeps every conference badge. I know that's, for some people, that's like sort of like a trophy that they kind of hang them all up in their office or something. Yeah. But for me, that's actually visually very distracting. So I don't do it. But sometimes I keep certain things from conferences that are meaningful to me, like a pin or a certain ribbon or something like that. But so one way to limit the accumulation of clutter in our lives, I think, is to try to go digital with as much as possible. So some ways I try to do this are by scanning receipts, scanning documents that I don't necessarily need to keep, like a paper copy of, recycling magazines or catalogs that might otherwise just sit there after I've read them, or sit there until I read them. But yeah, once I read them, there's no reason to keep certain things if it's online anyway. To pass on books that I've read and enjoyed to friends and colleagues who might also like them. I especially like to do this with like business books or certain things that I probably could get the information online if I really need it. But I'm not the kind of person who goes back and rereads books very often. So I prefer to just pass that on unless it's something that I need for reference. I also have some very specialized dictionaries that I use, but I would say that I use kind of 60 to 75% digital dictionaries online or you know, digital copies that I have. Or, and like maybe 25 to 40% paper. And that's the paper, you know, hardback dictionaries, it's very rare. It's usually for a very specialized term or something that maybe mm-hmm. I need, you know, like a medical term or right. something like that. So, yeah. I try to pass things on that I don't need necessarily or don't use much anymore. What about you?
Wow, it's really impressive what you do to keep your life and your office clutter-free.
Well, it's not always perfect. Right. Tell you that. It's
always work in progress. I feel yeah. like it's, this is a hard one for me. I like to think of myself as an organized person, but my office really needs work, especially because I love books and I find it hard to part with them. I have recently shared a picture of a corner of my office, of my home office, on our Instagram account, and you can see that my bookshelves desperately need some emptying and reorganizing. I love buying books and keeping them, though mm-hmm. I am trying hard to, you know, recycle or gift or donate the stuff that I don't
need. It is hard. Yeah.
But I agree with you that on a daily basis, I like to keep my desk pretty neat. It's just easier for me to focus on my work if it's, you know, no stuff piling up around me. But at certain times, there is some clutter on it, like after conferences, of course, or when I work on a long and particularly challenging project, when I need to have my paper dictionaries, maybe some style guides or notes next to me. But then I always like clean all that stuff out when I'm done. Also around the holidays in December, I feel like it's usually pretty messy because then I have stuff I need to mail out, maybe some postcards. Yeah. You know, also if I receive a nice postcard or just some paper marketing material that I think I like and want to use as inspiration, I'll keep it around my desk for a while just to kind of have it,
yeah,
you know, to be able to see it and be like, oh, I want to do something similar, or go like, no, finally not. I can just, you know, recycle it. There's some tricks that I use to keep things under control. I like having landing spots for physical mm-hmm. objects. I have one in every room or in areas where just things tend to pile up quickly. It may be a basket or a box or a folder. For example, I have one in my home office, and my husband and I put any papers that come in that have been already dealt with, but mm-hmm. need to be shredded, scanned, or archived, we put it in that box. And once a month, like I have set a day, and I will talk more about my sort of decluttering day later. So once a month, I have a day when I clean out that folder, which doesn't take long because it's, you know, it's not too big. And I deal with all the things that are inside, and then it's empty again. As I mentioned before, I have two kids. I have one in preschool and one in elementary school, and there's a lot of paperwork that comes from school. And so I have a small sort of command center in the kitchen where when I unload their backpacks after school, I have a little sort of paper organizing station where I put their homework or artwork, any papers from school that I need to read or act on or maybe sign, and also bills to be paid that come in the mail. And so that's something I do on a daily basis and like clear out mm-hmm. weekly. So it's empty again for the next week. And then in other areas around the house where people who also live in this house with me are, and they are less organized than me, they like to drop their stuff. I sort of trained my husband and my kids to put their stuff in the basket that serves as a landing spot for all the what I think is clutter. And they don't. And so once a week, we will all pitch in and empty the basket and just put the stuff away where it belongs. So that's.
Do you all really stick to that though? Because I could totally see us trying to do that, and we would not do it once a week.
We do because I make them. Like I may struggle to keep some areas of my home office organized, but around the house, it really gets on my nerves if there's like stuff piling up on surfaces. Because I like
too.
I like to keep it clean, you know, especially because I spend a lot of time in the kitchen cooking, and I don't want to have like piles of papers and keys and like jackets and whatever. So I really do. I have trained them to use that basket.
I love it. Right. Well, you'll have to come train mine. No, but we do have this pile in the kitchen on the counter in one corner of the counter, but it gets out of hand sometimes. Mm-hmm. Or like if there's something that needs to be dealt with right away, it won't go right into the pile. It'll be like next to the pile. And then that becomes a problem, you know?
Yeah.
But it's true. We do accumulate a lot of stuff, especially with kids. I can't even tell you, since my daughter started going to preschool, I know you know this probably too, mm-hmm. the amount of stuff they bring home that they work on. And if I get one more piece of paper with glitter all over it,
oh my gosh,
it's everywhere. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's and I'm not complaining. They do a lot of really good stuff at school, but it's the accumulation of paper is amazing. Oh, anyway.
Yeah, we could probably do like a whole other episode on just dealing with that, you know. I have a system that works pretty well, so I can share that with you later.
Oh, yes, please do. Okay. So, what about hobbies that involve collecting things? I think this one can be tricky. I'll give you an example. I used to do a lot of crocheting and even a little bit of knitting, but it's the type of hobby that I would do kind of in spurts. Like every few years, I would get this itch to start crocheting again, and I would start crocheting all kinds of things, like things for my daughter, things for like electronic device, like sleeves and covers and things like that, like interesting stuff. But anybody who works on these types of things or anything similar knows that oftentimes when you have this specific pattern or design in your head, you need a certain type of yarn and you need a certain color. And that type of stuff can accumulate as well, because you sometimes only need that certain type of yarn or piece of material or whatever for a certain project. And then you move on to the next one and you still have leftover from the first one, things like that, you know?
Yeah.
So I have a ridiculous amount of yarn that I no longer really use. I'm sure that I'll get back into doing it at some point, but like I said, it kind of comes in spurts when I feel like doing it. And then I have this like accumulation of it. Now it's put away. It's not out and about, but I know that it's there and I'm like, it's not being used. I should just give this to somebody who will use it. And you know, it's beautiful, like, spools of yarn and everything. Anyway, that kind of thing. But I think it's probably fine to have what you need for your hobbies, as long as it doesn't get too out of hand like mine has. So also, when you're not really excited about a hobby anymore, it might be time to think about donating anything you're not using to somebody who will, kind of like I was just saying about the yarn. Another hobby that I have is photography. So I do like hobbyist photography, but I feel like that's probably an easier thing to deal with because a lot of that is digital these days. Yeah. But, you know, there is equipment involved in all of that. So it's sort of, I don't know. I feel like with hobbies, as long as you're using it, the accumulation of certain things is fine.
Yeah.
But there comes a point where it's like, am I going to use this again? Or is it just like me not wanting to let go of it, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I love your hobby. It's actually one of the things that I want to learn is how to knit and crochet. I think it's tricky because when you really enjoy doing something and when it's a hobby, it also serves as sort of a mental decluttering. You know, as you do it, you just really kind of wind down and relax. And also it's an enjoyable activity. Mm-hmm. And so if it's stored away, I think oftentimes it's kind of like out of sight, out of mind. You forget it's there and then you regret not doing it more often. And I can certainly relate to the challenge of you know, keeping it under control. I love doing crafts in general and also with my kids. And I have several bins of craft supplies that desperately need to be organized. And right now they're just tucked away in a corner in my home office. But I need to look through that stuff. And I bet there are many things there I could donate and just keep a few. And the same goes for my home library. And one of the things I planned for this year is to go through it. And I just want to do it, you know, reasonably, just one shelf at a time.
Yeah.
I cannot possibly handle the entire bookcase in a day or whatever. And just put aside the books I can gift or donate.
Mm-hmm.
With collectible items in general, I have set a rule a long time ago, even before we had kids, before I, you know, that was a challenge, like with space or whatever. And I really find it helpful. Like I, for example, I love tea. I shared it before and I have maybe like 50 different kinds of tea in my kitchen. And I have ruled that whatever I collect or whatever that I have, even if it's consumables, the items have to fit in a certain space. So there have to be physical boundaries, you know, around it. So whether it's one shelf or one box, I do the same with my kids. If they are collecting something. So physical boundaries are helpful. And anything that doesn't fit in that space has to be gifted or donated. So
that's interesting.
And you know, like my daughter collects little toys or little figurines or even just some trinkets that she brings from school that her best friend had gifted her or something. And to me, it's like, oh, did we throw this away? And she's like, no, I'm collecting those. And I'm like, okay, so we have a box where she has to keep that. And if it doesn't fit anymore, we have to look through it and, you know, clean it out.
Until the day she finds a bigger box.
Oh my gosh, no, we're not doing a bigger box. Like, mommy, I found a bigger one.
No, oh, that's funny.
It's a challenge to find a good solution when you are trying to organize and declutter while your partners or roommates or spouses or kids love collecting something and love bringing things home that are special to them. Or maybe they just find it difficult to part with stuff because they think it'll be useful one day. So I think, again, sort of landing spots could help, physical boundaries, you know, deciding on a box for trinkets and memorabilia. Like my husband and I, we like traveling and we traveled even more before we had kids. We still travel quite a lot. And he likes keeping a map of a place we went to, like a physical paper map, and maybe a postcard from that place. But eventually things go out of control. And so again, I enforce that same rule. We have one sort of shoe-sized box for those things, for like travel memorabilia. And when it gets full, we have to take some stuff out and you know, recycle it. We can't have it overflowing. And then another rule that could help is if you bring in a new item, you have to donate or gift one old item, sort of one in, one out. But I think what's important as well is what seems like clutter to you may not be clutter to the other person. So if you're sharing space with someone, it's really important to act with kindness and grace when you discuss how to approach the situation and how to make it sort of bearable for everyone and enjoyable for everyone.
That's true. That can be hard too, you know. We have designated a few spots too, and sometimes I'll see stuff, you know, sitting around, and if I'm not having the best day or something, I'll say, why is this here? We have a spot for this, you know, and so, but that's not really helpful. So, yeah, but it is good to give people reminders when you have set those types of spaces up, but you're right. Everybody has to, you know, be able to live together and share the same space. It's something that we all should be able to respect about each other. But it's true that clutter, I think, does bother some people more than others. And I am very bothered by it. But I know that my husband is not as bothered. And I know, and he's very tidy. So it's not like, you know, I can't say anything negative at all. But I know other people who have things everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they even notice sometimes. Or I don't think they realize how much more free their mind would be if they would remove some of the clutter. Like, I don't think they've actually considered that. So I don't know. But anyway, so that brings up a question, like, how do you decide what to keep, what to donate, what to give away, recycle, and when? So this scenario can be easy when we find that we no longer want something we have, or it's no longer serving us. But I know that, like, I have friends who refuse to donate or give something away or recycle or throw it away if they think it's maybe still good, and I'm using air quotes, or still usable. And I find that this can be a slippery slope. Like, my own thoughts on this are that if I don't use it regularly or I haven't needed it in the past year, I probably don't really need it at all. And if I didn't even remember that I had it, then I certainly don't need it. You know, and there's sometimes we come across things where, like, oh, I forgot I had this, or, oh, that's where that is. You know, it's kind of like, do we really need this? So, one thing I learned from someone I follow online and that I always remember when I'm decluttering is to ask yourself the question, would I buy this again? And to me, that's the perfect question, because if the answer to that is no, I wouldn't buy this again, then I really just don't need it.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. And funny story, it actually, you know, happened to us when we moved to Houston. We thought this will be a 2-year assignment and then we would go back to Norway. So we left most of our stuff in storage in Norway, which at the time was brand new things because we had just bought an apartment together and we bought all new things for the apartment. So we kept it in storage, and then fast forward 5 years later and 2 kids later here in Texas, we decided to stay here. And then, of course, we found a whole container full of stuff from Norway arriving on our doorstep. And I mean, there was furniture, kitchenware.
Oh, my goodness.
Like decorative objects that we thought, you know, were important to us, but we didn't want to bring to Texas with us. And then it got shipped back to us here. So we sort of had it, I think of it like 30 boxes of stuff. We had to like let it sit in our garage for a couple of months trying to sort through it. It was very overwhelming. We realized that we never missed all of that stuff. We never needed it. We did not need it at that point in our life. And then Hurricane Harvey happened here in Houston and many homes were flooded.
They
were displaced.
Right.
And so for us, it was an opportunity to give it all away. And then even some extra things we had here in our house that we realized we didn't need. So
That's wonderful.
Sort of a good opportunity for us to part with things we didn't need. We could donate it to people who really needed them. And even without natural disasters happening, there are a lot of people in need, and I always try to remind myself about it and try to donate things first. And with kids as well, like around the holidays, as you know, it's easy to get a lot of new stuff for the kids from family and, you know, older gifts they get around Christmas and other holidays. So what we do around Christmas time is together with the kids, we go through their toys. And I know it's not easy with the little ones, but it's easier when they're older. Just go through their toys, and we leave some toys for Santa to collect and to gift to other kids. So are not just getting new stuff constantly, but they're leaving some toys for Santa to pick up and to give.
Oh, it's interesting to frame it that way.
Right.
Yeah.
And then for my book collection, my book obsession, I found a bookstore here in Katy that takes gently used books and gives you store credit. And so you could either use that store credit or you could donate it to a local school so their teachers could come in and use your store credit to purchase books
for that's great.
School library. So that's amazing. That's something I want to do this year again. I've done it in the past. And I like donating my kids' books to their schools if they accept that. Certain preschools do. I don't think elementary schools do that. But you can also check if your local shelters, foster care centers, or women's centers accept donations like this. Not just books, but just, you know, stuff in general. And there are some organizations that will even come out to you and pick up the stuff. And they will sort through it and they will recycle what needs to be recycled and then donate the rest. You could also invite your friends over to shop your closet or shop your home library and get rid of some stuff you no longer need that's still in good shape. And I usually think about all of these things just naturally 3 times a year around springtime when we're changing our wardrobe and I have to, you know, you have to reorganize the closets and sort of getting the house in order for summer break. And then at the end of the summer, when I start thinking about getting the kids ready for school, and that's another time when I like to sort of purge the closets and the rooms where we accumulate stuff. And also during the winter break, sort of end of December, early January is when we also end up donating quite a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's interesting. And it brings me to another question. Is it best to organize a little bit every day to stay on top of things or just to clean things out when it gets too chaotic? And I mean, I don't know that there is any one way, but I think that maybe a little bit of a mix of both is probably more doable for most people. Yeah. But when it comes to doing a little bit every day, I think that that's a good thing to shoot for, but it's not always easy. Like we have some days and weeks and even months when our work or our home life is so hectic that it seems we can let areas of our home or offices become overly cluttered because we just don't have time to deal with them. Right. I like to do a little bit every day, but it's also my nature to see something that's sitting out where it doesn't belong. And then I just want to put it away. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that I do this with everything all the time, but I do it a lot. I've noticed that about myself lately. I think one way to get into this practice is like when you're going from one room to another. Every time you leave a room, try to pick something up that needs to be put away and just do it right then. Or like if you're like our home has 3 levels. So if I know that something needs to go up or downstairs on my way out of a certain room, I will try to pick up as many things as I can to take to the opposite place that needs to be put away there, you know? But every time you do that, you know, you're kind of putting some of that physical clutter out of the way, but it's also taking some mental clutter out of the way. I mean, if you think about it, whenever there's something just sitting out in the way or it's bothering you for whatever reason, like a pile that's just been there forever, whatever the case is, if you see that all the time, after a while, it will start to kind of become mental clutter in the sense of like visually. And I don't think everybody notices it, you know, thinking like, oh, this is really bothering me. But I think that if we do try to keep things as tidy as possible and declutter on a regular basis, mm-hmm. we'll notice the effect then. Like if we actually try to keep things decluttered as much as possible, I think that's when people really actually notice the effect of it. So yeah, I know somebody else who actually sets a timer for 10 minutes every night and she'll put away as many things as she can in 10 minutes. Or if she's like really tired, she'll just say, okay, I'm going to put away 10 things. I tried to do this at one point, I think it was like last year, and it works really well. Just give yourself a time limit. It's kind of like what you were saying, give yourself like physical boundaries for certain things if you like to collect or whatever. And then just when it's over, it's over. When the time is up, the time is up, and you can just move on with something else.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. I love the timer technique. I use it when I feel that there's like, I have a lot of work, so I don't have the luxury of like organizing for hours at end or whatever. But I have some clutter sitting on my desk that's really bothering me. I will do that. I will like set the timer for 10, 15 minutes, and that really makes a difference. It's amazing. You would think, oh, it's not a lot, but it's enough to get those things out of the way so that you can focus on your work. And I also have a rule, actually, my family laughs at me, but I have a rule of picking up an item before I leave a room so that I can bring it wherever it belongs. What about mental clutter and all the information that we keep in our head daily, you know, plus the information and all the stimuli that is thrown at us from our screens?
Yes.
How do we draw the line between, oh, I want to learn this new thing, or I want to read this article, and also not becoming overwhelmed with all the content and information that's coming your way? Mm-hmm. For me personally, it's something I really focus on right now, because I feel it's becoming too much. Every year it seems it's yeah, more digital content and, you know, information that comes in. So I try to ask myself a question whenever I'm tempted to click on a link and read an article or read, I don't know, a newsletter. I ask myself, is this information that I need to learn right now? Am I doing a task right now? Or is there a goal that I'm working on right now that I need
takes priority
for, right? Yeah, just mm-hmm. checking my priorities. I also think that there's some features on our phones and computers that are maybe underutilized in order to store this for later, if you think you'll read it later. I like to keep a list on my phone. I know on the iPhone, you can even, if you open an article, you can add it to your reading list and just read it later if you're sitting at a doctor's office waiting for an appointment or something. Mm-hmm. Or you can keep a list in your notes app and just copy the link there. On my computer, I use an app called Sticky Notes, where I paste links to articles that I know I want to read later, but I don't have time to do it right now, or I just don't want to be distracted with several tabs being open on my screen. And I also like to, whenever I feel tempted to subscribe to something like a newsletter or something online, I make myself unsubscribe from a few things that I'm already receiving and I'm not reading. Mm-hmm. And you could even set like a weekly goal. Like if you feel overwhelmed with all of the emails coming your way from, say, commercial emails, I mean, or newsletters, just make it a goal. I'm going to unsubscribe from 3 things every week or 5 things every week, and just
interesting
it off when it's done.
Yeah. Well, that kind of brings me to the question about what about electronic clutter? Like the things that we accumulate in our emails, on our computers, on our phones and other devices. And what you were saying about, you know, like all the information these days, it's so true. We live in a time, and it's not going to change. If anything, it's going to become more and more so. That there's so much information out there to consume. And, you know, I'm now wondering if that might be why physical clutter can bother us so much or become so overwhelming, is because our minds are actually so full of clutter too,
right?
Not just from the physical things around us, but because of everything going on. It's nonstop, right? So yeah, like what about the electronic stuff that comes into our emails? And I love your idea of the unsubscribe. I don't remember if we were talking about this on the podcast or if I just was talking to somebody about this, but you know, like you said, to do like once a week, unsubscribe from 3 things or something. That's an easy thing to do, either when you see it come into your inbox to go ahead and do it if it's something you don't read much, or just do a search in your inbox for the word unsubscribe. And then you'll come up with so many things, and you could set a timer doing that for 5 minutes or something,
right?
Whatever. Yeah. So I'm definitely not somebody who deletes a lot of electronic clutter unless I absolutely know that I won't need it again or need to refer to it at some point later. Instead, what I like to do is I like to have my main inbox with as few emails as possible. So I utilize folders really well, and I'm not saying that to brag. It's actually sort of a newer thing that I've tried in the past year, and it's working really, really well for me. So what I do, and I think I've mentioned this before, is I categorize my folders in my inbox by certain areas of my business, like accounting or clients or colleagues. And then let's say I have like, and it's not just one group, you know, it's like colleagues, colon, and then the person's name, mm-hmm. or like clients, colon, and then the client's name. So for each folder, I put the name of them, right, under that category. And that way, every time I get an email from somebody that I plan to keep or that I might need to refer to later, I put it in that folder after I finish dealing with it. So it's been really good for reducing mental clutter by not having like an overwhelming inbox, but also it just keeps all the messages from the same person or business or whatever it is in the same place. Right. So it's easier to search later if I need mm-hmm. something. But when it comes to my phone, I could be really better about decluttering it. One thing I have done, which has been really good, is I've consolidated all of the apps on my phone into specific folders. So I have like apps related to business, a folder for that, and then apps related to health, other ones for social media. Another one that I have is just for like books. So for example, my Kindle app goes in there, and then my Audible app and things like that. I have a folder for music apps and all of that. So my problem on my phone is actually my photos folder or photo, what do they call that? Stream? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. You know, where you keep all your photos, essentially.
Yes, right.
I have so many photos. Sometimes I go through and I'll delete like a lot of them that I don't need anymore. Like let's say I took a picture of something to show somebody or send them just so that they could, you know what something was or see it or whatever. Right. And then I realize I still have that photo on my phone. So I'll delete a lot of that stuff. But, you know, we go on a lot of trips or I have a lot of photos of my daughter or something. I might screenshot that I want to remember like a recipe or something. Mm-hmm. And then honestly, just thinking about the amount of clutter of in the photos on my phone is so overwhelming. It just is. So if you have tips on that, please tell me.
Well, I have something that works for now. I've been doing it ever since my daughter started preschool. So when she was 2 years old. And by the way, we have very similar systems when it comes to organizing our emails and apps. I do the same thing as you.
Good.
But when it comes to photos, so when my daughter started preschool, her school takes a lot of pictures of kids during the day, and they're available to the parents through the app. And then when they graduate preschool, their pictures get deleted, like I think a month later or something. So early on when she just started going to preschool, I decided I did not want to deal with like years of photos later on. So I set a date in my calendar and, you know, I get a reminder on my phone on the first day of every month. I have sort of a declutter day, but it doesn't mean that I do it all day long, but it usually takes about an hour, maybe an hour and a half that I will download all of the photos from that app. And mm-hmm. right away, I connect my phone to the computer and I sync, you know, I sync my phone because it happened to me a few times that I, you know, lost all my data from my phone. So I sync it to my computer. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I clean out my inbox and my email, and I delete all the photos from my phone right away because I found that even though I think I may want to see it later, I really never do. So I'll just keep it on my phone, on my computer from then on. And that's also the day when I clear out my paper folder in my office. So it's like all at once, it's done and I don't have to worry about it anymore.
That's great. All right, now tell me this. How do you keep yourself from not putting that off and saying, oh, I don't feel like doing that, I'll do that tomorrow?
Oh, it's just been, you know, it's been so many, I've been doing it for so many years now. Like it's just there. It's in my calendar. It's in my paper calendar. It's in my, phone calendar. It's, I know that sometimes that first day of the month falls on an awkward day when it's a lot of work, and then I'll just move it to Friday because Fridays are usually pretty quiet.
Yeah.
But I do it once a month, and I don't miss a single time because I know that otherwise it piles up and it gets overwhelming. Mm-hmm. But it's hard with the photos that you take. I will say though that I started taking less photos after I had the second child because things get just too busy, and you know, I feel like we had way more photos of our first child than our second child.
I think everybody says that. Yeah.
Yeah. But when it comes to sort of decluttering digital devices in general, I find a couple of features useful. If you're using an iPhone, you can put in your settings, go in your settings and than the iPhone storage and see all of your apps, and it shows when was the last time you used this app. And for me, if it was longer than, say, 6 months ago, I just delete it because it shows I have installed it, you know, on an urge or whatever, and I ended up never using it. So I just delete it. You can also activate the feature offload unused apps where they get deleted automatically if you're running out of space.
I should do that.
So your iPhone will see and, you know, go like, oh, you're not using that app, or you haven't used it in a while. So if you're running low on space, it will get deleted. But you will not have to, if you ever find that, oh, I actually do need it, you will not have to buy it again because it's in the cloud. So you can just upload it again.
Wow. I think there are features in my phone I have no idea about.
Right. Yeah. Same for me. It's just kind of you learn as you go. I also like to use the app called OneNote to store links and resources. So instead of saving documents that I think I'm going to read later or refer to later, or certain links that, like, for researching terminology or translation projects or stuff in general, the system in OneNote to organize it in folders and sort of categories. And that's worked really well because it's searchable. So I can type in the search function, say, this particular training course I took, and I want to look it up again, and it'll show all of the things that I have saved there. And I also think we all would benefit from sort of learning to use our digital devices mindfully. And I know on the iPhone, this feature exists, maybe on other sort of brands as well. You can set up the screen time feature, and it'll tell you how much screen time you've had this day or that week. And you can also set limits. If you feel like you're using your phone or your digital device too much, you'll like get locked out of it at a certain time, you know. So if it's really a problem, that could be useful.
That's interesting. I've seen that the weekly report type of thing, but right. I also think that it probably counts for, like, when you're listening to something like a podcast. So yes. I'm like, is this really that accurate? But it probably really is. It's just my denial.
Yeah, I think that it's pretty accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
So we've shared a lot of tips, and now it's time to recap. So here are some strategies that may be helpful in decluttering your space and your mind so that you can feel more focused, more calm, and more organized and productive. Well, first of all, is to realize what works best for you. Do you really have that sort of minimalist style, or does clutter just not bother you and that's not a problem for you at all? And then you may not need all of these strategies. Well, one thing you could do is to try and go digital as much as possible, you know, scan papers and try to keep things electronically instead of hard copies, passing on books and other items you don't need and that could be donated or gifted to other people, establishing landing spots for physical items around your house or your office, like baskets or boxes where things can go instead of piling up everywhere. Having sort of a command center in the kitchen or in the office for mail, bills, and papers that you need to deal with so that they don't get lost or start piling up everywhere. Establishing physical boundaries, especially when it comes to hobbies or things you're collecting or other people in your household are collecting. Establishing some rules, like if you bring an item, you donate an item. If you subscribe to a newsletter, you unsubscribe from one or three newsletters. Setting time regularly could be once a year or once a month when you go through your hotspots, be it office or closets or other areas that tend to accumulate clutter. Or try to do a little bit every day. Try the timer method, or try doing a decluttering day or decluttering hour once a month like I do. And then we shared some apps and sort of digital systems that could help you archive some stuff on your digital devices and keep track of the time you spend online.
Wow, that's a lot of stuff. Lots of good ideas, though. I hope that this is helpful. So we hope that this episode has given you some new ideas for what to do when you feel that the mental or physical clutter in your life make it difficult for you to enjoy your life and your work. If you happen to give any of these tips a try, or if you have some smart habits to share on this topic, please let us know. send us an email at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com or leave a comment on our website under the show notes for this episode. And now it's time for a smart habit check-in. This is where we ask each other about a habit we may have committed to in a previous episode, and we check in with each other on how we're doing or what we might do better. So Veronica, what habit are you working on right now?
Well, I am happy to report that I've started using my full focus planner, which means that I sit down and I set my goals for the year. I must say that starting with a planner was a bit of a learning curve, and I really did need a few hours to fill out the beginning part of the planner where you set the goals and then break them down into steps and all of that. But the rest, like the daily check-in part, is really a breeze and very simple, very really helpful in, you know, prioritizing your tasks for the day and keeping it all clean and organized. So I'm loving it.
Good. I'm glad you like it as much as I do. So mine is that I've been keeping up with daily exercise, something that was really important to me. I enjoy exercising, but like when I have so much work going on, it can tend to be one of those things that I just push to the side. So I've been taking the movement breaks that we talked about in a previous episode, and it's been working really well. So I'm happy to say that that's going well. My water intake's been pretty good too. I'm just following up on a previous habit check-in on that. Yeah. But I do find that certain days when I forget to drink as much, I notice the difference now for sure.
That's great. Yeah, I feel like both with exercise and water, it's like when these habits are established and sort of ingrained into your daily life, when you really start noticing when you miss an exercise or don't get enough water, it's really noticeable, right?
Yeah.
So let's do another one of our regular segments, the Book Nook. What are you reading right now?
I actually just re-listened to James Clear's Atomic Habits. So I love this book and his take on how to form habits by making small changes over time. It's very practical. And he talks about stacking your habits. So trying to add a habit that you want to have or do onto something that you already do. Mm. So like the example of, let's say, drinking more water. So each day, you might put a full glass of water on your desk and set a timer or something like that. And when the timer rings, you might drink it, but that might not be something you would normally do. So you might decide that when you sit down at your desk, you will set a timer every day. That might be the habit that you stack onto the habit of sitting down at your desk, start the timer, something like that. And that way you know that the cue is when the timer goes off, you drink a glass of water or something of that, you know, to that effect. It's just very practical and it's something to help you to start getting into the mode of doing something repeatedly. And in fact, in our last episode, I mentioned something I'd heard and then I realized after we recorded it that it was from James Clear's book. And he says, you do not rise to the level of your goals, you fall to the level of your systems. Mm. And I think that one, that's true. And anybody who's listening and knows that habits and how we plan our systems is key, they're going to get this quote and it'll make sense. We can make all the goals in the world, but if we don't create a system that works for us to achieve them, then we can easily fall flat. Anyway, his book is just really practical and I definitely recommend it to anybody who's interested in habit formation and improvement.
That's so cool. I think that problem with sticking to habits that we want to implement is exactly that, is that it's kind of like with the goals, it's just too large. You have to break it down into steps and then stacking them seems like a great idea. And, you know, you could then like build up on that. So, okay, you are used to drinking your glass of water now. And then maybe your goal is to, I don't know, if you have to take like supplements or vitamins or whatever, and then you remember, okay, I drink my water, I take my supplement, and then you take the next step and, you know, you do something else. So that's really cool. Okay, so the book that I have recently reread as well, I actually bought it when I was pregnant with my first child, and I felt like I needed an easy, lighthearted read recently, so I reread it, and it was perfect. It's called Parenting, Illustrated with Crappy Pictures by Amber Dusick. And, you know, the title kind of says it all, but the pictures are just really cute. It's just not, I mean, it's not like very artistic or anything. They're just really simple. It's a really fun, lighthearted read. It's really funny, especially if you're a parent or you have kids around you. It's relatable. It's perfect for mental decluttering. So I highly recommend it to parents, future parents, or anyone you know who may be expecting a child or helping to raise a child. It's a really fun read.
That's funny. Oh my goodness. Yeah, we can all use a lighthearted read right now and then.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's it for this week's episode. We'll be sending our email subscribers a checklist of all the tips and strategies we mentioned today to declutter your workspace and your mind. We'll send it out on March 3rd, so if you'd like to receive it, please sign up for our emails on our website, smarthabitsfortranslators.com. And if you'd like to be notified when our episodes are released, you can subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to it.
We hope you enjoyed this episode and discovered a simple strategy that you can apply today at work or at home to help you achieve the lifestyle you desire. If you did, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
If you have a topic you want us to cover on this podcast, please record a quick voice message and email it to us at hello@smarthabitsfortranslators.com. If you like this episode, we'd love it if you would leave us a review and please share the podcast with other translators you know.